Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're continuing our expectations series today, and we have two players to look at, Ronnie Stanley and Michael Pierce, that could be pretty central to the Ravens 2022 season. Here to join me and talk about that is Childs Walker, the Baltimore Sun. Childs, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. How are you? It's good to be back.
It's always fun to talk football with you. Really, always fun to talk a lot of different topics with you, Childs, because you've done a lot of different reporting in your career. I just learned today for the first time that you were really a horse racing guy. Not exactly my direct cup of tea, but always interested in hearing different local sports angles.
Yeah, we were starting to get into syndicate compositions and stuff like that before we started started recording. I don't know that the listener is game for that, but yeah.
always lots of fun anyway. So remind people of how this series works. We're talking about two disparate players, Ronnie Stanley and Michael Pierce today. The idea is to pick one offense and one defense, or at least two people who aren't at the same position group, so I can give a variety of analysts a chance to come in and talk about players that they were interested in discussing, what their relationship to the to their own position group is, and also their importance to the team in general, and their unit. So Childs took Ronnie Stanley and Michael Pierce. Really appreciate that. And we'll talk about Ronnie Stanley first. And obviously coming back off basically a year and a half gone. He was injured in that home game against Pittsburgh just days after he'd signed a big contract, which was really unfortunate. But tried to come back in 2021 for one game with against the Raiders. That didn't work out, and he very quickly shut himself down for the season.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he's one of the most important variance pieces of this entire team as we go into the season, right? Because if he's Ronnie Stanley, I mean, not even necessarily of 2019, where he was maybe the best pass blocker in football, even the Ronnie Stanley of 2018, 2017, if he's that and he's out there every week, that's a whole problem that you don't have to worry about, that you've had to worry about for the last 2 years. But I don't think we can't say that with any confidence right now, right? And I think the Ravens have that concern as well. So it's one of the biggest questions about this team going into the season. No doubt about it.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And it's almost more like it's not even just one problem, because as we saw last year, it became a domino of problems. And I don't honestly believe Alejandro Villanueva would have been a great right tackle, but they kind of thought that they had right tackle solved initially with the signing, and that would have been just a different problem to solve that they maybe could have addressed. But, you know, when Villanueva has to move to left tackle, where he had just a frankly an awful season, PFF's grades are much higher than mine in terms of how much 3 second pressure he had versus 2.5. He gave up a lot of walk back pressure. Very unbalanced, and Lamar just didn't have the trust for him on that side. I think it really affected him. It definitely affected Huntley in terms of his time in there. So, you know, having that left tackle solidified again is absolutely critical, and there isn't anybody else, I think, that's a reasonable chance to do it. I think if we're looking for Moses Falele or James to do it, I think that would be more than a lottery ticket.
No, I agree with you. I was going to say that if you didn't. I mean, that's there is still so much hinging on Stanley, because there is not an obvious person to step in. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I guess that Moses could do it and probably wouldn't be bad, but I mean, you know, that's not why they signed him, and mm-hmm. they really did not draft anyone who could step in and do it right away. So it's, in essence, we're back to where we were at this time last year, I think. I mean, it's really not that different in terms of the dynamic and the importance.
Yeah, definitely hoping. And, you know, it's often said in business that hope is not a strategy. Sometimes it's the only strategy in sports. You know, you just, there's certain things that are beyond your control. I actually dislike the way the NFL has become, that it's so health-based that determines almost every season. It seems, I mean, the Bengals were healthy last year. If the Bengals have really convinced themselves they've got their franchise together in a way that will lead to several consecutive Super Bowls here, they're completely kidding themselves. There are elements of them that are good, but they're not an obvious, you know, Kansas City Chiefs here.
Right. And, you know, on the flip side of that, it's very hard to really assess where the Ravens were at the end of last season. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, just when we, and I suspect, you know, I haven't heard them say this exactly, but it must've been a challenge for them with their roster analysis coming out of the season and sort of figuring out their plan for the offseason to really have an honest assessment of where they were, because health decimated them to such yeah. such a degree, you know. So
we've seen that happen now in two seasons. I think you look at objective metrics of health, and PFF has a couple that they've looked at, but the 2015 and 2021 Ravens were two of the worst teams of the last decade, and I think it's two of the worst five. The 2021 Ravens, one of the two was the absolute worst. Mm-hmm. So that at least is a reason for optimism in a sense. On the other hand, there's some carryover here. We don't know where Ronnie Stanley is. We don't really know where Marcus Peters is. We don't know for sure that Marlon Humphrey is going to be playing at a high level again. I mean, all of these guys who are coming back from these very significant issues, J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, I mean, concerns are reasonable to have.
Yeah, I mean, now we've probably seen some more reassuring signs from some of those other players. I mean, obviously Marlon is already out there at OTAs and looking like Marlon. So, you know, I think you probably put that on the less worried side of the ledger. Marcus Peters, you know, as at least expressed a lot of confidence in where he is. He's at least, I mean, he's around the team, you know, mm-hmm. it looks good. You get the sense that might not be that far off at the beginning of camp. The running backs, I mean, you always worry about a running back, right? I mean, when they come back from a serious leg injury, you know, because if you even lose 10% of that position, that's a big difference. But Stanley, I think, has to be the greatest, most important mystery of all of those, partly because we went through this last year, right? We thought everything was on track, and that was the message from the team. That mm-hmm. was the message from him, that, you know, he might not be there right at the start of training camp, but he was feeling good about where he was. And, you know, there would be this sort of gradual ramp up. And he thought, you know, when he went out on the field in Las Vegas, he would be something close to the old Ronnie Stanley. And of course he wasn't at all. Mm-hmm. Now he's had the subsequent surgery and he's expressed in the same optimism, and the team has expressed, I would say, somewhat more measured optimism, but we're basically back where we were last year with the evidence of last year to make us more worried about it, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's actually not as good a position right. as the start of last year.
Right, right.
You know, there's so many things about the interaction of Lamar Stanley with other players on this team that I kind of want to get into it here. But his health really affects Lamar Jackson and the trust he can have. I've mentioned on the show a number of times, Lamar takes a blindside bump or blindside constraints on the pocket better than any quarterback I've ever seen. He moves out of it. He moves very fluid, moving up or to the right. He's also very fluid, oftentimes spinning around that pressure coming from that left side, even when it's coming from the blind side. So Ronnie Stanley has made his blocking technique about mirroring his opponent very well and giving ground in the pocket as necessary to let that happen, because he knows it doesn't really bother Lamar that much. And it's more important to keep hands off Lamar than it is to keep his butt from running into Lamar, getting into Lamar's space. That's actually better speaking. Now, I think Alejandro Villanueva, in a way, tried to duplicate that, was very unsuccessful at it. Whether we're talking either player, I record many more pressures for Stanley on that left side than PFF does. So they have absurdly low pressure numbers and sack numbers and whatnot. I've got him contributing to other events that are between 2.5 and 3 seconds. But Lamar works extremely well with that. And with so many extended plays and his average time, you know, approaching 3 seconds overall, you know, there are plenty that go over three. It's very necessary that he have that trust with Stanley, that guy is not going to get his, even if he gets close, he's not going to get his hand on him.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what we saw from watching Lamar last season was that he clearly did lose that. What, I mean, I don't know exactly what you would call it, but whatever you would call it, that sense of security.
Confidence.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he looked like a less confident player, you know, around midseason. And, mm-hmm. you know, obviously then, you know, he had the illnesses and he actually got hurt. But even before that, he wasn't the player that we saw early in the season, wasn't the player that we had seen in, you know, at his best in the previous seasons. There was something that had changed, and I agree with you. I think you have to say that Stanley was a huge part of that.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about goals for 2022. I think we can actually predict what each other's goals are, but why don't you start first, and we'll kind of alternate as we go through this before we get to what a good and great season is.
Goals for Ronnie Stanley. Yeah. I mean, it's really games played, right? I mean, that's number one. I mean, you know, if you're, you know, even if you're not confident he can play 17 games, you know, I would think it would be a goal for him to start 14 or 15 games. That would be number one, I would say.
Yeah, that's great. I just put health. Yeah. It's a really simple thing. If he can play, he'll be out there. It's not 100% of the story because we just don't know after a year and a half if he's going to be the same player. But I'll get my second one is rebuilds trust in the blind side with Lamar so he can do what he does effectively, maintain mirror while giving ground. And I just explained it. So I won't do it again. But that to me is the biggest goal of the relationship between them that I could see.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. It's almost hard to come up with other goals beyond the obvious couple, right? I mean, I guess you could say another goal would be to be part of helping to cultivate one of the younger linemen who might be able to help contribute if he can't be out there every week or, you know, if he's not there in the future. I mean, because, you know, Ronnie has certainly talked about wanting to be a leader of the offensive line. You know, after Marshall Yonder retired, there was a sense that he was sort of the obvious guy to step into that. And so part of that would be potentially nurturing the next generation, you know, whichever candidate you want to center on. So that might be something a little off the beaten path to think about in terms of what he's doing.
Yeah. So it that's great, by the way. I didn't have that on my list. I should have, but mentoring is not always, it's not something all players are really cool with. Some want it and some don't. I think Ronnie would be secure enough that he wouldn't be worried about losing his position to Daniel Faalele, who would be the obvious choice to be mentored.
Right.
You know, so that I think would make some sense in that way. To me, I'd pick another mentoring relationship or another relationship of integrated value is that he could work with whoever ends up at left guard. I still think it'll be Cleveland. But if it ends up being Pierce or McCary, whoever it is, you know, develop a real rapport with him to make that gap as safe as possible. It will be a gap always that other teams will try and stunt on, that other teams will try and cross. And it's having that relationship is good. Cleveland actually has some very positive characteristics about processing from center to left, right? It's the center out, but he plays left guard. So it's center to left where he could help with some bailout blocks. And that's particularly useful for a lineman who intentionally wants to give ground as part of their mirroring. So Cleveland has a chance to knock someone who Stanley's effectively mirroring on his ass by moving out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Do we have to come up with any more goals or is that enough?
I've got one more that injuries have not really eroded his pass blocking skills. I guess the next thing is that the quickness is still there for him to be an effective run blocker. The last time we saw Ronnie Stanley play, he was a guy who could get into level two and level three and make a run block. He's a rare tackle with the quickness to make an effective backside run block on a play where he doesn't have to just dive in there and make a cut. So I really like that. And if he can't get back to that, that'll be a component lost of what Ronnie contributed to the offense, certainly in 2019 and 2020.
Well, and that's what makes the best guys at that position special, right? I mean, that's why they're some of the premium players in the game. And, you know, that he was an example of that. And it's, given the injuries, the particular injuries he's dealt with, it's an open question whether he gets back to that, even if he is on the field.
All right. So let's get on to what is a good and a great season. I'll toss it out there on a good season here. I put this together that he returns healthy to start the season, misses no more than a game or two. I think that matches with some of the things you said earlier, is still effective, if not dominant, as a pass and run blocker. So, and he develops a rapport with the left guard and stabilizes the offensive line with his presence.
Yeah, I think those are all good. I would say starts 15 games gets back to being sort of the 75th percentile kind of performer that maybe we saw in his first couple of seasons. And that we see, I mean, I think you have to measure Lamar's performance a little bit when you look at his performance, right? That we see a more confident Lamar than we did, you know, middle last season, toward the end of last season. Now, I mean, obviously that's not a totally easy thing to judge and to put on a lineman, but you know, that will be part of, you know, reckoning with the overall story of his season, I think.
Yeah. I don't think that's unreasonable at all. I think, you know, having them get back to the rapport and the understanding they had is a very good one. I'll bump it up to a great season here. I say he returns healthy, And at the midpoint of his 2016 to 2020 level of play, he doesn't have to play at 2019 or 2020 again because he was unbelievably good in those years. But if he could be at the midpoint of that level of play from his first 5 years, I'd be thrilled with it. He improves the play of the left guard by his presence, and the Ravens offense returns to the top five in terms of efficiency metrics, which I think is largely going to be dependent on him. He's such a central piece on this, but what I want is points per drive that are back at about 2.65 or higher, that are at a historic level of 3.08 in 2019. It's the fifth highest of all time. People didn't, you know, some Baltimoreans don't even really realize just how efficient that offense was, but, you know, they built up a lot of big leads. They allowed the defense to play very comfortably in a lot of the second half with these heavy pass rush schemes. And I think this year, with the secondary built the way it is, this is an exciting time for the Ravens to become a dominant turnover team again. And having big leads, having a two-touchdown lead in the second half, goes a long way to allowing you to sell out into these all-pass defenses.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep it very simple in terms of what would be a great season for him. He starts every game, and we're not asking questions about him at midseason.
You know, I love it.
We've kind of stopped talking about him as an issue. We're back to taking him for granted. I think that would be great. That's
so many fewer words than I use to communicate a very good thing. So if we take him for granted, I think he'd have to be back to that average level of play at least. That does it for me. All right. Well, that's why you're in journalism. You can cut your whole outfit to 2 inches there. All right. So let's talk about Michael Pierce a little bit. So he's returning for his second tour with the Ravens after a 3-year deal was terminated after just one season with the Vikings. He took 2020 off for COVID concerns, played reasonably well, but in only 8 games this last year before he got hurt. So not ideal. He'll be 30 in November. Remains one of the best run-stopping nose tackles in the game for my money.
Yeah, and in a way, you know, he's a good pairing with Stanley because health is kind of the number one question with him as well. Now, that's maybe not entirely fair because he was a fairly durable player when he was in Baltimore. I mean, he was a, you know, I don't think he ever played 16 games, but I mean, he was playing 13 and 14 games a year. I mean, he was a guy that they could rely on for good part-time work. In the 8 games he did play for the Vikings, he was pretty productive. Still, as you said, a very good run defender, and even had the 3 sacks. Now, I mean, I know some people have probably gone back and really looked at those 3 sacks and, you know, the context for them, and, you know, was he really a more productive pass rusher than he had been in the past? I have not done that, so I don't know the answer to that. But, you know, just on the surface, you know, a productive 8 games at least. So you could say this is not a guy where we haven't seen any of his old talent for 2 years.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the big difference between him and Stanley. Pierce had been Stanley had been too before he got injured. It was a, you know, extraordinarily productive player who played almost 16 games per year, but always seemed to miss a game or two for some reason. In Pierce's case, he played as many as 50% of the snaps. That's very rare from a nose tackle. And there were multiple reasons, but for him to play 50% of the snaps in 2019, if I think it was 49.9, actually, he is doing it for a team that had big leads in the second half, did not play a lot of base defense. They played only about 10% base defense that year. They actually played more of their race car package with 4 outside linebackers. They played a base defense in 2019, mostly a function of that second half, of having leads in the second half. So it's something. He really was amazingly durable when he last was with the Ravens. I was actually very scared for the Ravens to lose him. He went to a contract the Ravens couldn't match, but he was the lineman I thought was really the best and youngest of the group at that time.
Yeah, and I mean, he's stepping in for the guy who used to be his running mate, Brandon Williams. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for my money at this point in their careers, I think he's clearly a better player than Brandon Williams on a per snap basis. So in that sense, you would think it would be an upgrade if he's able to be that durable player that he was when he was here.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned the sacks and whatnot. What he did with the Ravens that was effective and always kind of underappreciated is take some double teams on passing situations and still push the pocket effectively. So there's somebody, a lot of times pressure is about just getting somebody into the cone, and it may not always be countered by a pressure by all services. But if you get someone into the quarterback's cone where they can't comfortably step into their throw, that's usually very good. If you just move a center or a guard such that somebody else can slip by, or you create an opportunity for somebody to blitz off your rear end, that's a very positive thing people do, and they usually don't get credit for. Haloti Ngata never did when he's at Baltimore. So I personally think Pierce makes contributions as a pass rusher as well, even though it really doesn't show up statistically very much.
And I think by and large, in recent years, the Ravens have done a good job of not asking their interior linemen to do things that they can't do. I mean, of not asking them to be more than they are. So in that sense, having Pierce back here, I mean, I think they know. I mean, obviously they know what he can give them, and I mean, I don't think they will try to lean on him more than he can help them, if you know what I mean. Right. I think there's every reason to think they'll find a good fit between usage and ability.
Yeah, they're I mean, they've always been exceptionally good at that, but in particular on the defensive line, where it's been a rotation heavy scheme, they know who can play which downs and which down and distance effectively and help them by package, so they're good with that. We ready to talk about some goals?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go ahead. I'd say he plays between 40% and 50% of the snaps as he did with his peak with the Ravens. I think that would be a great place to start. He's obviously got help with Travis Jones this year, so probably has a reasonable chance to get there.
Yeah. I was going to say probably 15 games would be a goal. I mean, you put it in terms of snap percentage, which is also important, but you just want to, I mean, you want to have him out there most weeks, right? After he's only played 8 games over the last 2 years. I mean, you really can't hold the COVID decision against him in terms of durability. Sure. Either. I mean, we'll look at it and say he's only played 8 games over the last 2 years. That's probably not entirely fair, because it implies that he was beat up in 2020, which was not the case. So, I mean, I think it's really, get back to the durability of the season before last.
Yeah. You could even make the counterpoint that he actually had a year less of tread wear because he took the COVID year off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to have the next thing is able to pace his play well with the addition of Travis Jones in the rotation at nose tackle and provide what I think could be a really exciting 1-2 punch with Jones in terms of guys who can play 1 and 3 tech. So one thing we saw when Pierce came into the league, and he was a UDFA when he first came to the Ravens, was that he took over the 1 tech spot, and Brandon Williams was the guy who had to change positions and go to a 3. Brandon obviously never really complained about it, but honestly was not as effective playing as a 3 tech than as a guy who could be 350 pounds if I'm not going anywhere, as I used to say about Tony Siragusa, and take a lot of double teams. But Pierce, very effective in a 1-3 with Brandon Williams. The Ravens run defense was as good as it's ever been at that point.
Yeah, I'm really I'm excited to see how he and Jones play together, and I'm excited to see Jones in general. I know he's not obviously not our primary subject today, but he's looked very good in sort of a limited way in OTAs. I mean, there's no contact really, so it's hard to say that, but I mean he sort of looks the part. So, I mean, he'll be one of the more interesting rookies to follow, and that I think he could make a real contribution right away. With Pierce, you talked about his impact on the passing game not being able to maybe be measured in traditional ways, but I think it would be a goal for him to maintain some of that pass rush, that sort of more obvious pass rush production that he was able to deliver on a limited basis in Minnesota. I don't know that it's probably unrealistic to say, he would get 5 sacks or whatever you would project on a per game basis. But you'd like to see him get a few and establish some of that interior push that we have not seen as much as the Ravens would have wanted to see in the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, even Calais Campbell has not really delivered in terms of sacks for the Ravens, and he continued to be last year one of the Ravens' best defensive players. I we look at every play defensively, and we're picking out the highlights, and Campbell stands out like almost nobody. And it's play after play. He's making plays, or he's setting up plays for other players. I mean, just, but yeah, I'd like to see some finishing out of Pierce too. I think that'd be wonderful. What do I have more? Anything more? Yes. I want other teams to have to think about Michael Pierce and as the focal point for where their blocking needs to go. If that happens, other players are going to have good matchups. So if other teams come in and say, hey, Michael Pierce needs a double team on the inside, because if we just put our 312-pound center on him, he's going to push him back like he's nothing. That's what I want other people to be thinking. Now, if they think that about Travis Jones instead, that's fine too. But Michael Pierce, if they have to do what they did with Haloti Ngata and really start your blocking schemes from the inside, get him blocked, and that left one-on-ones on the edge for players like Suggs and Dumervil and Arthur Jones and other players who were there during the era, I'd be excited about that.
Yeah, no, I agree. One thing I was interested to ask you, and this doesn't exactly fit right here, but it kind of does. I mean, I know some people raised eyebrows at the Ravens signing the deal they did with Pierce. Did that raise any? I mean, did that surprise you at all? I mean, were you or did it seem like it made sense?
It didn't really surprise me. What surprised me last year is that they didn't take a defensive lineman in the draft, and they had a chance at Christian Barmore. He would have been the choice to take, but they would have had to give it up on Owe or Bateman. I think they probably made the right choice, although Barmore has played well so far. It was a very old unit. They already knew the problems they had with Wolf. In fact, they've now effectively, the way I see it anyway, is either one of Wolf or Urban is going to make the team, but they're both older players. And Pierce is a guy they're bringing in on a band-aid basis. He's not a permanent solution. Right. He's an older guy as well. And you know, they've been through this. They've been on a treadmill of kind of older players on the defensive line, which is an area where typically the Ravens have drafted extremely well. And it's a little bit surprising to me, but I'm very excited about Travis Jones. Great value, and I think he'll be a really good player in the defense.
Yeah.
Are we ready for good and great?
Yep.
Let's do it. Okay. So my good is he starts the season at nose tackle and delivers at a high level of run defense without any consideration at all for what his pass rush contributions are. He can be good just by being the run defender they expect.
Yeah. I mean, my good would just be that he's the Michael Pierce of 2019, basically. I mean, he's out there for all but a couple games. As you said, he plays, 40-50% of the snaps, and he's a 75th, 80th percentile run defender at his position. I think that's a good year and a good value.
Okay. Yeah, that would certainly do it too. I'll put a great is that he, Campbell, and Jones form an imposing 5-1-3 front line. Okay, 5-tech, 1-tech, 3-tech, the Campbell being the 5 and him the 1 and Travis Jones the 3 front that helps control the line of scrimmage on first and second downs. The contributions he makes create uncomfortable down and distance situations for opponents. So this is going to be a big thing about the Ravens is, can they get other teams to 3rd and 8, 3rd and 7, and then be able to put on their, dime and quarter packages, which have 6 or 7 defensive backs to impose their will on opposing offenses. But it has to start with being able to provide a good defensive standard on 1st and 2nd down. And those are the downs, of course, that Pierce would be playing.
Yeah. Very, very similar for me. I think great from him would be, he plays 16 or 17 games. He's not only a very high level run defender, but he's part of an interior line that is able to create more pressure from the middle on quarterbacks. Whether that's directly shows up in his statistics or not, that he's part of that sort of alignment that you just talked about, and that's making an impact on the quarterback more than it has in recent years.
Okay. Appreciate that. That's great stuff, Childs. And I like the fact that you're going with more qualitative things than quantitative. That's pretty much where I am. Other than kind of snap count, I really kind of try to stay away from awards and numbers and these things, because it's so hard to predict numbers within the Ravens scheme. It really is, particularly on the offense, but also on defense.
Well, yeah. And I mean, with Stanley, I mean, we could list the Pro Bowl as a goal, right? But I mean, there's some pretty big steps to get to before we even talk about that, right? So it's almost I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. It's always great to talk football with you, Childs. Tell folks where they can talk football with you.
Yeah. So BaltimoreSun.com still. I mean, I'll be, you know, I'll be writing Raven stuff over the next few weeks as they get through their last OTA and mandatory minicamp, you know, and as will my colleagues. And then, obviously things will get a little quieter for about a month then as we and they, take some time away, but then we'll be ramping up for training camp with a full on coverage from every side imaginable. So that's it.
All right. Well, I hope we'll have some chances to exchange a few words and comments in at camp. That should be real fun.
We'll look forward to that.
Other folks out there, if you're looking to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs on Twitter are always open. I always get back to people very quickly about ideas, and we've had some unbelievably good ones recently about the evolution of the game, the wide receiver devaluation, all sorts of very theoretical topics from people. Just are very interesting to talk football with, and love to do that with you if you're out there and have an idea. Childs, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I look forward to the next time.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.